You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hi, this is Stuart Wright, just cutting in before the start of the show to let you know that this conversation that I had with Beatrice Newman is a little bit of a break from the norm. I've been out on the road, well, not literally, but virtually at the very least, and this discussion you're about to hear took place as part of the Imagination Exchange, a series of online talks, workshops and conversations that explored what it means to connect across interests and creative focus. The conversations were undertaken as part of development work for two large-scale festival projects in 2021 and 2022 and were produced by The Barbican in collaboration with creative individuals and organisations from Waltham Forest. On with the show. So the aim of this conversation is not, obviously, we're not going to resolve sustainability in 40 minutes. I think that'd be a big ask. So I think the aim of this conversation is to unpack some of the headlines with regard to sustainability in film, point you to some resources that you can check out after tonight and look at what the UK film industry is already doing and where more can be done, which is where you and I all fit in, I guess. So with that in mind, sustainability is an ongoing challenge that will get easier the more people that take personal responsibility to get involved. We hope that we can start you off on a journey, or for those already on board, make you aware of where you can put your best efforts and where freely available resources are at your fingertips. Beatrice is going to mention a few websites, I imagine, during the conversation. So when I put this out, what I'm going to do is, in addition to what goes out on Miro, I will make this available via the Britflix podcast, and I'll put all the links and resources to in the show notes. And I've already shared a few with Ilna already, which I think are available on Miro, but they'll all be contained together within the show notes. And if we get time, which we hopefully allow 5-10 minutes at the end, we'll be able to address some of your questions if you have any. So the focus is going to be on the climate change emergency in the sense of being greener, as it were. However, we will be making time to look at mental health and wellbeing too. So let's start at the beginning. Beatrice, sustainability isn't a new concept, is it? So what does it mean? I mean, I've read, you know, live the best life you can live as a kind of catch-all phrase, which sounds nice. So how and why is that important for us to understand?
So, yeah, I do want to start to kind of frame it and define it, how I look at sustainability, and because a lot of people maybe know it, especially in a business sense. When you talk about sustainability, you actually talk about a business making enough money to actually be able to survive. And it's also in the film industry, it has been a big conversation for a long time, is how can you grow, how can you develop as business, your career, and actually be able to live of it. So that's kind of the really historic definition of it. And this has been really broadened. And the big thing which kind of entered the film industry was actually looking at environmental sustainability. So we're going to be talking a lot about that. But what I find really, really, really important, and it's kind of interesting that the film and TV industry hasn't really taken to widening sustainability to that enough or at all, is to also include social sustainability, which is more about making any kind of changes and also, you know, becoming carbon zero eventually, hopefully, fingers crossed, making it a just process and taking into account that it also has a social impact. So that's kind of really key for me when I look at sustainability. So, for example, the courses I'm designing, they're 50% environmental, 50% on social sustainability, which also looks at work relationships, for example. What's a really good place to kind of get your head around how wide you can cast the sustainability discussion is when you look at the UN Sustainable Development Goals. If you put that into Google, you get them, they have really nice graphics, and you will see it's really far-reaching, and actually the environmental goals in it are actually only probably not even a third of them relate to environment. It's also getting rid of poverty and a lot of other things. But a lot of activists in the field of sustainability have started to reference these goals. So that's a really good kind of point. A lot of artists actually have referenced these goals. For example, Olafur Eliasson has made a whole project around them. So that was the important start, what we actually...
Well, thanks for that, Beatrice. And so let's start with the bad news first before we get into the practicalities of it, because the environmental side is the kind of bit that's got the headlines over the last few years. So let's start there. Why is it important that we talk about this, and what are the headlines in terms of the emergency we face as a planet, Beatrice?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm not gonna tell anybody any news that we are that actually this government has declared a climate emergency. So it is we are there. It's high time we all engage in it because what we have to avoid is further global warming. We want to keep global warming under 1.5 degree. And it's basically we can see now the effects undeniable all around us. I would say if you look at the weather we had in the last couple of days, that's quite a good indication of how crazy things are getting. And also kind of something I'm kind of personally at the moment dealing with, I'm selling my flat in Walthamstow, and it's quite close to the marshes. So I'm barely above sea level, and it's now affecting buyers in the sense that they have to do all sorts of proofs for their mortgage lenders to actually get a mortgage on it. So that's new. That didn't happen when I bought that flat. It was something I must say was in the back of my mind, and the house I'm buying now feel super lucky I'm going to move to Yorkshire is I actually made a note, on 226 metres above sea level and in a low risk flood zone. So it's things we just have to consider now in kind of daily decisions we have to make. And there's so much information on that. We will break some of it down as we go forward.
So I've seen a lot of Greta Thunberg on the telly. I understand that there's a great passion for change within the youth. So why is it not the responsibility of that generation? Why can't we just forget about it, Beatrice?
Well, I feel really guilty when I watch her because I think, oh my God, I'm kind of middle-aged. I kind of helped let this happen because I didn't kind of care enough. You know, I thought, yeah, I care about the environment. I recycle. I always recycled. I take my own bags to the shop and not take any plastic carrier bags. I thought, yeah, I'm doing quite well. And actually, I don't think I was going to do that here, but why not? So I want to tell you just a little thing that happened to me, kind of my epiphany moment, if you like. So I teach, one of the thing, many things I do is teach a module on distribution festivals and marketing at Sheffield Hallam University. And I had, so I have all these fabulous film production students who are doing their graduation films, and they have to design a campaign around it. And I had this young woman, amazing young woman, who made a film about plastics. So it was a couple of years ago, maybe 3-4 years ago. And so it just was kind of a bubbling up conversation. And she was so passionate about it. In those 3 months I was teaching, became an activist, a climate activist. And she really inspired us. First of all, she made a great film. And I tell you, all of us tutors, and we were quite a few of them across the course, we all had bamboo toothbrushes at the end. But it was really this moment where I just realized, kind of recycling is not enough anymore. If I want to claim I'm, environmentally conscious, I have to do a little bit more. Also kind of really thought, well, it's not the job of a 16-year-old teenager in Denmark, or no, in Sweden, sorry, she's Swedish, to kind of make this happen. Obviously, I mean, that it got that far has a lot to do with big industry, but I think in terms of us understanding how we can actually change things, what we have to demand and how, this future could look like, I think we have to live it. And that was kind of my starting point, that I started actually looking at my own personal life first and started to make changes. So getting rid of plastics was kind of, phasing them out was kind of my first step into that. And and as I say, as we pointed out already, now is the time. Now is the time. And I also think it's if we kind of start doing it now and have a bit of time to get used to it and phase it into our lives, it will be a lot less painful, because there's already a lot of laws in the works which actually gonna force us to make changes, and that will be a lot more painful. And I don't think it has to be.
Well, look, there was we've all just lived through or are living through the COVID crisis that came along from nowhere, and out of that there was a huge experiment in terms of being kinder to the planet, because suddenly we weren't able to do the things that we were able to do willy-nilly and freely before. So what have you seen? What have you seen there, Beatrice? That has been sort of the green shoots of hope, as it were.
Well, I mean, I really enjoyed not having planes over my garden. That's for a start. Also, I noticed that even though Walthamstow is not too bad in terms of being able to actually see some stars at night, it gotten better. So that was immediate, and also what I think we all I'm sure would notice is the improvement of the air quality, just, being to breathe a bit easier. Also, things not smelling so bad, maybe smelling a bit more in your garden than the pollution. So I think, we all had a chance to experience it, what it means if there's a reduction. And what I really acutely then noticed it as things started opening up, even already last summer, I immediately could feel and smell and breathe the pollution levels rising, because we had that moment. And I think for me, I got really worried that we're coming out of this, because then, all of a sudden when it came to, for example, green production, all of a sudden, you know, recommendation in terms of being able to produce film and TV during COVID was going back to single-use plastics and all of these things, which made me really worried because I thought, no, that's not really necessary. And we shouldn't use that as an excuse to actually step back rather than forward. However, bad news again is that, and I learned that from the Greta Thunberg BBC series, is that actually the CO2 levels haven't really gone down because actually everybody went online and that actually increased levels. So we didn't actually, it didn't even stop. It actually crept up, just not at the same speed. So shame, I would have loved to have a little bit better news than that. And I think because I look at sustainability also in a social sense, it obviously hit, you know, poor people and you know, those more disadvantaged people, they were worst hit by the pandemic. And I think that is another thing, you know, I'm really worried about going forward as we actually, all these support measures are going in, especially in the film industry. A lot of us, so I've been self-employed now for quite a few years. I was very lucky to be still working during the pandemic because I actually didn't qualify for any support. So I would have gotten really difficult if I hadn't had been lucky enough to be working. So,
well, look, Beatrice, thanks for bearing with us there, because that's very much the kind of macro side of things. Yeah. And obviously you as individuals and people working for companies and in film want to know how that personal responsibility that I mentioned at the outset probably can be acted upon and how we can lead that best life we can live. So one of the things that Beatrice introduced me to is this idea that we can all become carbon literate, which is not a phrase that I was particularly familiar with. I don't know if anybody listening in has heard that before. So where can people start with that idea, and what does carbon literacy help you as an individual, Beatrice? How do you see it?
But so if you want to start engaging in, it's kind of, you want to know the facts, right? You want to know why you're doing this. But that's at least my approach to things. I want to know. I want to know why I'm doing things and what, you know, what impact it might have. And actually, what is the problem I'm trying to tackle here? And it's really, if you start looking at that whole thing, and that's why we picked climate emergency as the focus here, it impacts on so many things. So it can be really overwhelming. So it's kind of, and then also, so carbon literacy is really getting kind of the basic facts there. And it's also important because, you know, we want to convince our partners, our friends, our families, our surrounding, what's surrounding us, maybe our colleagues, that, you know, it's a good idea to be a bit more conscious. So, but a lot of them will know facts. So it helps to kind of be able to actually talk about it. If you're in the film and TV industry, really easy way to get like a first kind of introduction to it. Only takes 2 hours, doesn't cost any money. You can head over to Albert, they have free training. And so one of the courses which give you a lot of the information is the sustainable production training. And they run it like regularly. When you go there, you will see sold out, sold out, sold out, sold out. Just keep scrolling and you find one which is available within 2 weeks' time, I think you can sign on. There's also one for storytellers. So if you want to approach it on a more creative thing, which is, you know, telling stories and, you know, letting it bleed in your creative work. So you can approach it from that side too.
Yeah, I just want to add there, Beatrice, as a writer, looking into that, you can on the Albert website, you can you can see diagrams of how they've organized sort of stories that are being written and how they can become social messaging. So there's a predominance. I think Brexit was the most dominant thing that is being is what's been influenced by narrative writing, and sort of environment and climate was really low down the order. And essentially, it's a bit like what Bitches was saying about how the training can help tell your friends that. Therefore, we as creatives can be sort of subconsciously informing everybody of what's the better thing to do through our work.
And I've started listening to a lot of podcasts since I'm doing all this research at the moment for my courses. And actually, different podcasts like Mothers of Invention was one I quite enjoyed. Unfortunately, at the moment, no new episodes, but still worth listening to the old ones. There is a huge agreement across the board that storytelling and telling stories and getting the message across that way is actually the best way to convince people. So let's do it. So another thing, and I'm going to quickly pick it up because I forgot to prepare. If you haven't got much time, but you just want to, you know, and you don't want to maybe do another webinar and sit in front of another screen, I found this little book. My sister actually gave it to me. Small Gases, Big Effect. This is climate change. It's, as you can see, it's really small, has lots of diagrams, and it's really brilliant. So it's now in English translation. I had it in German. And it's really great because basically one chapter is one page, so you can really get like really easy facts. It will be one of the links I make available. By the way, anything I mention, I don't get any money paid by anyone for mentioning that. So it's just stuff I found, which I hope will be useful to you. But don't worry, I'm not getting paid for that.
Having watched the recent Greta Thunberg TV show where she interviewed Richard Attenborough, if anyone's seen that, it's very easy to feel overwhelmed. And I guess some of the things that we introduced at the beginning of this are kind of like, well, how do I fit into this? What can I do? And the key advice seems to be is not to try and tackle everything. You know, sustainability, as Beatrice said at the top, is also about your business surviving. It isn't just, you know, we can't save the world and save our businesses and everything all at the same time. You have to sort of prioritize the way you go about things, because the sort of race to be green isn't something that you get to an end line and then it stops. This is an evolutionary process. I mean, it's a de-evolutionary process that's got us in the mess in the first place. So in a sense, it's like unlearning the bad habits to create the good habits, which will make a happier planet. So, Beatrice, do you want to talk about how we can choose our green battles and why that's the better approach than simply just, what do I need to do? Do it all.
Yeah. You can go into a real rabbit hole when you start looking at the complexities of it, especially if you're taking... going beyond the green sphere as well, but you know, every climate change activist a lot of them also look at climate, what they call climate justice, which plays into the social sustainability debate. But a lot of these resources tell you, and Albert is one of them, is to really work out what is the worst thing you do, what is the thing which increases your own carbon footprint the most, and start with that. Obviously, you know, it's definitely good if you have your reusable cup and you know, and your water bottle, great things, not making a huge impact. There are probably bigger things you do every day which is worth, you know, looking at. But how do you find this out? So first of all, you have to know what is having a huge impact on my life. And that's very different for everybody, because we all have different lifestyles. We make different choices every day. So One good thing is, so there's carbon footprint calculators around. And when you're looking on, it depends what area you want to tackle in your life. If you want to tackle your personal life, then the best thing is to Google individual carbon footprint calculator, because they gives you ones which look at kind of daily habits rather than a specific industry. Because then, for example, the film industry, so Albert has one for on-set production that looks really specifically on on-set production. The way these work is they usually give you a set of questions. Some give you loads of questions, some a bit less. So I will mention one which I quite like, was the Climate Hero one. And again, the link will come your way. It's quite a big question. It looks at, you know, your buying, your consumption habits, how much you travel, you know, how things in your household, do you use green, you know, have you signed up to a green energy tariff, do you use, you know, your own tote bag to go shopping or not, things like that. Do you have energy saving light bulbs? You know, all of these things you get asked, and so you put in all your answers. Obviously, you can do this as often as you want. So if you want to kind of find out how the outcome and your CO2 impact changes, your footprint changes, then obviously you can up it or down it and see what happens. But what I really like about this one is, first of all, it asks you quite a lot of questions, so it's a bit more accurate in terms of what you get back. You get a lot of information with it when you get the results. And you can then look at what you do really well already, so which is really good, because you actually need some positive feedback here too. And then it tells you it encourages you to pledge to do better in the areas you're not doing so well yet. So you basically can do your own little pledge. You tick the boxes you want to tackle in the next few weeks or next few months. And then you then have a plan. So that is a great way to make a start and start breaking it down. If it's still really overwhelming, I found a really great thing, which was actually I learned about it on in lockdown, wanting to kind of do something for myself. I attended a course, Science of Wellbeing, and I discovered a really great tool. It's called Whoop, so WOOP. And again, I give you the I will give you the link. And so it really breaks it down. It stands for wish, opportunity, obstacle, and plan. And when you go on their website, whoopmylife.org, it tells you everything about this toolkit. And it was developed by scientists. And it's really great. It really helps you to actually solve that little problem you put into that Whoop. And there's even an app on the phone you can do. So that is a great thing if you need a bit breaking down and it's all too much.
Beatrice.
For anything in life, by the way.
Beatrice, we're gonna share an image now with people, yeah, so they can get a sense of the hopefully everyone can see this. This is a diagram of the sort of end-to-end filmmaking process. Do you want to talk about where the film industry is doing best, film and TV industry is doing best, and where more can be done, or where opportunities should be looked for?
Absolutely. And credit for this beautiful slide goes to Stuart, by the way, and to his wife, Tiff, who did the filmy recycling logo. Actually, a lot of green sustainability discussion is concentrated on the actual production process in film and TV. And TV is actually if you look on BBC and Channel 4, almost every production has the Albert Sustainability Certificate. So there is TV has really pushed to kind of make a change there. However, it really tackles only the production process. If you look on the Albert website, it takes you to the steps of it. You basically apply in pre-production. You kind of look at every area. Then, you implement it during production. Then you report on it. And then you offset all the bad stuff. And then you get a certificate. It's kind of, in principle, how it works. So, but basically where you have to deliver is on set. And everything else is really not that much talked about. Film festivals have been actually really picking up their pace in terms of delivering more sustainable events. Especially independent cinemas have been quite good at it. For example, I'm a member of the Castle Cinema in Hackney. I actually always wondered why there wasn't a bin when you went out of the cinema, because even also in commercial cinemas, I pick up my trash and put it away. And I couldn't put it away anyway, so I carried it back home until I realized they actually should have communicated better, though. They actually have a green policy, and part of the green policy for cinemas is that you take your rubbish away.
Beatrice, I just want to say that the important thing here is that as we go backwards through the process to development, as we go forward to exhibition, there's less sort of regulation, and therefore this message at the outset of this sort of webinar about how it becomes personal and therefore company responsibility on what you're doing to become a greener industry, because there isn't an Albert certificate to be gained in development. And that's where, with the carbon literacy, we can we can become better informed as filmmakers and as film companies. One of the things that Beatrice surprised me with in terms of where one of our biggest things is at the sales and distribution end of it, going into exhibition, which is, while lockdown has meant we're all at home more and we're not travelling as much, the storage of film for streamers is a big green ticking time bomb, isn't it, Beatrice?
Online in general, any sort of online use, online streaming obviously requires huge servers, and they eat a lot of energy. So that's why our CO2 emissions didn't go down but went up, continued to grow during lockdown. So the two biggest areas of impact in the film industry are online, anything online, storage, streaming, anything to do with online, our use, the companies providing it. And the other thing, which is the difficult thing and the sticking point for a lot of the rest of the value chain, is mobility. And that means travel and also sending things to places, shipping things to places. But so the areas which are not so much tackled is really getting a film actually to production, and then the actual exploitation of the film. And it really bugs me, as you know, having worked for 20 years now in the sales and distribution sector, that my sector basically completely ignores that whole conversation. Yes, there are individuals who are personally concerned and start making changes, but in terms of the sector, and they're not being asked to change yet. And it really annoys me. And especially in sales and distribution, I mean, I used to, but even as a freelancer, I still traveled 10, 12 times. I did 10, 12 return flights a year. And when I used to do acquisitions, it was even more, because I traveled to markets and festivals. And I can tell you that whole sector can't wait to return to that. It's part of the lifestyle when you work in that sector. And I'm really concerned that this is not tackled because they have to change too. And also, if you're going for all the effort to do a sustainable production, surely you want it to also be sustainably distributed and everybody in the value chain taking the same care. I mean, there's so much to talk about in terms of what you need to look at, but I think that would really blast the frame of the session. But just kind of in terms of financing, you know, where is your money coming from? What are these people doing? So just to give it maybe a bit more tangible example, for example, one of the things I want to tackle next personally all and in business terms is to bank with an ethical bank. And what I've decided also to do, because I think it's important, you know, we have relationships. Our whole business is built on relationships. We don't want to sever all our good relationships because they're not working in a sustainable way. So I think the best other thing we can do is encourage them to change their ways and not expect them to do that immediately, but kind of, you know, maybe help them with information, with maybe giving them, say, listen, have a look at this, maybe do a carbon literacy training.
But I think as well, Beatrice, I think one of the things that COVID's proven to people is that physical festivals can be done virtually. You don't have to be at all the festivals. I mean, yeah. I think one of the tricks that we've convinced ourselves over the years is that development starts with going to a festival and trying to attract a financier, trying to get a sales agent. And we believe that's all got to be done face to face. And what we've learned over the last 18 months or so is that maybe that's not true, or that we can maybe be a bit more tempered in our enthusiasm to go everywhere and anywhere, whenever we want, wherever we want. Now, I'm conscious of the time. So I just want to, before we sort of stop for 5 minutes of questions, Beatrice, do you want to just touch on the final thing? Because obviously, I think we've covered quite a lot in terms of the macro, but also some of the resources and ideas of what's going on. But we said we'd touch on mental health and well-being. So where does that fit in with sustainability in your mind?
It absolutely fits in because, first of all, I think when you feel less guilty about things, it also makes you feel better. You know, about yourself and your life. And, you know, if you're environmentally conscious, obviously not feeling you're not doing enough can be quite a guilt trip. So I think that's one thing. So it does. And I think and I'm sure, again, most of you probably will have come across that. The film and TV charity did a study. They published it last year. I think it was called the Looking Glass Report, where they looked at mental health in the film and TV industry, and with disastrous results. We are above average in terms of our mental health, and that has a lot to do with working conditions. And I just want to give one example going back to production, why I always think social sustainability has to be part and, you know, looking after being and their well, after people and their well-being is. If you are down in the food chain, you know you are maybe a camera assistant rather than the DOP. You're not getting paid very well on set, yeah? Although that's probably not the best example, but, you know, even as a runner, so you're quite low dancer in the food chain, you're going to have this excruciating hours on set. But instead of having then some time off, which is kind of should be the payoff after all this hard work, and then going on to the next set with a nice break, most of these people lower in the food chain because of money and because of fear they're not getting that next job quick enough. They'll go straight on to the next set, and they do that all year round. They're not having enough time off. They're not having normal working hours ever. And also when you start out in the industry, it's kind of just expected that you put in your 10, 12 hours minimum a day, every single day. And so that is, I think, what affects us. So, but because I did this, so we need to tackle that as well. alongside with the environment. So that's the point I want to make. But I have some good news. There's kind of really quick things and things you can start doing tomorrow, which will immediately have an impact. And and I was quite surprised that how much impact I actually have. So I went through all this course to learn these three things are the most important things you can do with the best impact on your well-being. Make sure you have over 7 hours of sleep. Anything under 7 hours is sleep deprivation. Exercise, amazing impact. Obviously, find something you like doing. I kind of re-embraced yoga because the parks were so full. I didn't enjoy going for walks with all these people while we were had high incidence. And you only have to do 20 to 30 minutes a day, so it's not even that time consuming. And then another thing which has a huge impact is small acts of kindness. Doing just even a little thing for somebody has a really great long-term effect on your well-being. While if you treat yourself, which is kind of probably the go-to for all of us, you know, having your chocolate or whatever it is that makes you happy, nice meal, it actually is super short-term wellness effect. While doing something for somebody else is something you can go back to in your head and maybe they, you know, bring it up again. And it actually even people then thanking you for it then gives you another lease of well-being without ever actually having done another thing. And actually just, you know, sometimes stopping and thinking about the things that are, you know, going well. Gratitude, you know, there's no hail at the moment. The sun is shining again. That's a good thing.
So, we've sort of cut ourselves a bit short there. So apologies. We do have a time for, I guess, for a couple of minutes for a couple of questions. Has anybody got anything they'd like to ask about what Beatrice has covered this evening?
Hi, Beatrice.
Hi, Marcus.
Well done. That was brilliant. We're running a cycle in cinema around London now. And I think I didn't expect as you started talking to realise that that's directly relevant to what we're trying to get to, I think, is local film events run off a 13-amp fuse using existing resources, programming for communities that aren't getting films, maybe, not to say we avoid Marvel, but creatively very sustainable. And we're taking it around London at the moment. I just wonder whether maybe it's a conversation we should have anyway separately, but you know, apart from the power issue, we're a pretty sustainable model. I just wonder whether the industry itself is still not geared to being sustainable, because it seems to me that it's very much a resource-led industry, isn't it? And people that I know, as you know, in the business, they don't expect to cut back. I just wonder how we can sort of spread the message with something like a cycle in cinema model, you know, because some people, I'll be quick, are very wary of it. They see it's about cycles. It's not. It's about local cinema events, rather like with the Barbican Moving Pictures. So my question is that the exhibition model itself seems to be a problem as well, doesn't it?
It is people like you who are making the changes, you know, the kind of smaller venues who are, you know, just do it. And I think a key thing I would say is for what you're doing, all the good work you're doing, make sure you communicate it. Because mm-hmm. I think a lot of people do actually excellent work. And the more I look into it, I'm really encouraged about how, you know, the people I come across who do bloody amazing things. It's actually, we don't hear enough about that. So I think, you know, when you run your events, what I would really suggest you doing is create a trailer where you actually explain all the great things you're doing. Actually can go away and say, hey, I went to this event and, you know, not only was it a great film I saw, I really love how they do things well. For example, so this little booklet I already recommended, what mm-hmm. I really liked, so I read it all the way through and I'm kind of a person who reads small print in the end. So I read about the authors. And I found out that not only did they write the book, but they made sure it was printed with stained mm-hmm. ink and distributed sustainably. So how cool is that?
Yeah.
That makes it even better, doesn't it? And then, you know, I feel really comfortable recommending it because I think I'm not recommending a bad thing. So they didn't dilute it with bad distribution. So I think it's also demanding, you know, I mean, you're a filmmaker as well. I think just asking questions, it's really hard when you are, you know, you feel you don't have much leverage.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's really important that we just maybe start asking a lot of questions. And it's a lot easier to start asking a lot of questions when you're already in the subject. You maybe started making changes in your own life because then you know what you have to ask for.
You certainly give me the idea to have our own people encouraged to bring their own popcorn containers, for instance. That sort of thing. Yeah. That's very simple. Bring your own popcorn container and we'll put popcorn in it because that's a simple little change, isn't it?
I'm conscious we've crept over 8 o'clock, Vilna, and I'm conscious also you've got a question in the chat. Is there time to raise your questions? If
I will allow my question but I'm gonna keep your answer short. So
yeah, so this is the last question. Is there a metric whether a flight is higher carbon cost than a server for streaming?
I was really, when I did that carbon course with Albert, I was really worried at that time about my online storage. And so I did ask the question, I said, well, if it's under 1 terabyte, you don't have to worry. Obviously, the streaming side of things is different. But you know, just kind of your personal storage under 1 terabyte apparently is kind of not to worry about and probably not the biggest thing you should tackle. Flying is horrendous. And you, I think even on the Albert one, but definitely on the Climate Hero one, they actually have separate calculators for different things. So if you want to just check what's an individual flight, what impact it has, you can just check that flight. And then they ask you also to offset it. So they have a system of projects where you can immediately offset your bad habit. But obviously, the idea is not to offset it. The idea is to change how you do things. So, I mean, I did quite a radical thing. I stopped flying 2 years ago. So, and I only will take a flight if I really haven't got a choice. I mean, but I actually gave up a training course in Australia because I thought I don't want to have to fly there anymore. I think it's not worth it. Even though I have friends there, so it's kind of a bit sad. It wasn't a good way to see my friends.
Yeah, I was just thinking in terms of different distribution models and sharing, just thinking about that, sharing film across, you know, maybe not the physical DCP file or, you know, things like that.
I think we should all think about using more hard drives again. Mm. You know, it's kind of this funny thing. We all were encouraged to move into cloud drives. Mm-hmm. And also, again, you know, when you check which cloud drive you use, maybe just check if they have if there's a one which is actually operating sustainably and green and using green energy. So that's the way. There's a tech solution to the online problem, which is switching to renewable energies and operating it with renewable energies. The other thing is decrease usage.
Well, look, I think that's a good place to end on. And it just gives me to say thank you very much for you giving us your time to watch in. And thank you very much to Beatrice for all the top tips and advice.
Thank you for having me. It was lovely. I'm at the point where I want to talk about it.
Yes, just also to say thanks to Stuart and Beatrice for doing the session for us on the first day of the Imagination Exchange.
It's time for another season of The Palmetto Porch, an original podcast from Discover South Carolina. I'm Devin Whitmire. Join me as I get to the heart of what makes South Carolina such a great place to visit by speaking to the locals who make it so special. Premiering December 5th, find The Palmetto Porch wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information about our show, visit scpalmettoporch.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.